This is The Political Scene, a weekly conversation with New Yorker writers and editors about politics. It's Thursday, February 21st. I'm Eric Latch, writer and editor of The New Yorker's online news column, The Current, filling in for Dorothy Wickenden. This week, Bernie Sanders officially announced his second campaign for president. He joined a 2020 field already crowded with candidates, including five other U.S. senators. In his video announcement, Sanders remarked on how the political terrain has changed since his 2016 run.
We were told that Medicare for All, a $15 an hour minimum wage, free tuition at public colleges and universities, aggressively combating climate change, demanding that the wealthy start paying their fair share of taxes. We were told that all of these concepts were ideas that the American people would never accept. Well, 3 years have come and gone, and as a result of millions of Americans standing up and fighting back, all of these policies and more are now supported by a majority of Americans.
Benjamin Wallace Wells joins me to discuss the emerging shape of the 2020 Democratic field and what we've already learned from the first few true weeks of the campaign. Ben, welcome.
Hey, looking forward to the conversation.
So let's start by just reviewing our candidates here. We've got six Democratic senators who have declared or formed exploratory committees. So in addition to Sanders, it's Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, Amy Klobuchar, and Kirsten Gillibrand. And then Congresspeople Tulsi Gabbard and John Delaney are also in the mix, as is the former HUD Secretary Julian Castro and Pete Buttigieg, the mayor of South Bend, Indiana. And then that's not even getting to the people who are sort of not declared, but seem to be at least, you know, they're holding speeches and doing events and seeming to do the kinds of things that you do before run. Beto O'Rourke, former Vice President Joe Biden, and Senator Sherrod Brown. It's a long list. So what is this field? Like, when you look at it, what's notable about just the scope of it?
Well, I think that there's a few things. The conventional way of looking at the field, you know, is to sort them ideologically, I think, and to say you have a couple of major candidates, Sanders and Warren, who are pretty left-wing. You have some other candidates who are sort of in the middle, and that includes Booker and Gillibrand. And
by middle, what do you mean by middle?
I think that, and I'd put Kamala Harris here too, I think we'd say that they reflect the basic consensus of the Democratic Party without departing from it in a major way. I think that the consensus of the Democratic Party, I'm sure we'll talk about this, has moved to a more combative view of power and accumulated power and a more expansive view of a kind of economic correction that politics can deliver. Broadly, it's moved left. And I think that those figures sort of capture that movement left without really departing from it. And then you have, you know, Amy Klobuchar among the candidates who have declared, and Joe Biden notably among those who have not, in a kind of more explicitly bipartisan, moderate kind of area. And so that's sort of the conventional way ideologically that the candidates set up, though there's kind of notably less disagreement ideologically among these candidates than there traditionally is at this point in a primary.
And so let's talk about that, you know, the thing that Sanders alluded to in the clip we just played and what you were just talking about, this kind of move left and how that's expressed itself so far and why that's happened. In 2016, as Sanders said, the things that he were proposing were seen as the kind of like insurgent alternative views and ideas in the Democratic primary process. And now they're, yeah, like you say, kind of more in the middle. Why has that happened?
Yeah, I mean, I'd put it a little bit differently. I think that what was essential to Sanders' candidacy was not just the kind of policy prescriptions, $15 an hour, Medicare for all, you know, free college tuition, but the basic critique. That critique is basically that we are in an anti-democratic phase in the history of this country, you know.
That was his 2016 message.
That was his 2016 message. And the way in which that message has been adopted by the Democrats is basically defined by the relationship between moneyed interests and the Republican Party. Elizabeth Warren says on the stump, the president is a symptom and not the cause of these problems. In other words, that there are structural sort of imbalances that are caused by the relationship between money and political power, and particularly money in the Republican Party. And I think that, you know, though they're different and though their policy ends will be different, broadly, all of the Democratic candidates, and even more broadly, the Democratic Party, basically shares that critique in a way that they just didn't in 2016 or during the Obama years.
But Bernie lost in 2016. So what about the last 2 years makes these politicians confident that now this is the way to win?
Well, I think that there's a deeper question, which is like, what makes them confident that they're accurately describing the shape of power in the country? And I think the answer is the way that the Trump administration has evolved. You know, you have Elizabeth Warren now talking directly about corruption. You have the evidence of voter suppression, giving people who are maybe not as left on economic issues as Bernie and Warren a way to think about the kind of anti-democratic tendencies moving through the Republican Party. So for people from all sort of perspectives within the Democratic coalition, I think that the Trump years has just given like broad evidence that the shape of power in America is such that it kind of favors the wealthy and connected and leaves others out.
So you've written about how Sanders, part of his appeal in 2016 was a product of his position as the kind of like insurgent kind of revolutionary candidate.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's running again. And then a lot of his positions are not necessarily the insurgent ideas in the same way that they were 4 years ago. Is Sanders going to be able to run that same kind of campaign? And if not, is somebody else going to be the kind of like insurgent in this field?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a big question. It's been interesting to see that the Sanders strategists in a couple of interviews have said that one figure that they think of as kind of a main rival is Beto O'Rourke. And O'Rourke is not that similar to Sanders ideologically at all. But he shares a basic appeal.
Because you would think that Sanders...
Warren is the more natural adversary.
Right. That would be more threatened by the people filling his ideological space, but they're saying Beto.
Yeah, and I think the reason is that they understand that part of what Sanders was able to do very effectively in 2016 was to broaden what it meant to be a Democrat, to bring in people who became extremely enthusiastic about his candidacy, who were either young or did not vote much or, you know, were otherwise kind of generally detached from the primary. And to see Beto with a different ideological profile, you know, a kind of more mainstream Democrat in a lot of ways, be able to offer some of the same enthusiasm, the same sense of change and possibility. There's a sense that as different as those two candidates are, that some of Bernie's kind of emotional space has changed. And I think, you know, part of that is just the absolute success, the tenacity of the Democratic Party in sort of absorbing this kind of internal revolution and critique. I think that, you know, they've done that very nimbly. Bernie Sanders is now part of the Senate leadership. His policies are broadly picked up by Democrats. You know, I think that puts him in a somewhat different position this time than he was last time.
And so where does that leave the people you said kind of represent a kind of more, if not traditional, a kind of less ambitious agenda or less sort of new model of what the Democratic Party stands for? So I'm thinking Amy Klobuchar. And then the person who continues to lead the polls, even though he's not a candidate, maybe won't run, who's Joe Biden.
I mean, I think they each represent a different idea of what the Democrats should be seeking in this election. So Kamala Harris and Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and Booker and Gillibrand are sort of seeking to embody some of the changes that have taken place in the country, both demographic and economic and social. And their case to voters is that we have a strong chance against Trump because we can embody what is new and changing about this country against what is old and voters in a general election might want to leave behind. And both Biden and Klobuchar sort of prompt a different question from voters. You know, they want voters to be asking who's going to be able to win back people who voted for Trump and get them to vote for a Democrat this time around, particularly in the Midwest, where both Klobuchar and Biden have some roots and appeal.
Hi, it's David Remnick. If you're enjoying this podcast, you might enjoy even more of what The New Yorker has to offer. Becoming a subscriber gives you unlimited access to The New Yorker, including Pulitzer Prize-winning reporting, insightful cultural commentary, and fiction and poetry. You'll also enjoy our delightful cartoons, crossword puzzles, narrated stories, and much more. This past year, our readers were gripped by Ronan Farrow's profile of Elon Musk, Heidi Blake's extraordinary tale about Dubai's runaway princesses, and much more. Visit NewYorker.com to gain access to all this and more. Use the code POD15, P-O-D-1-5, to secure a 15% discount on a yearly digital subscription. That's POD15 for a 15% discount.
Let's talk about another sort of remarkable aspect of the early campaign, which is, in my view, a kind of surprising lack of attention paid to Donald Trump, like himself.
Yeah. I think that part of it is just about like where we are in the process, right? Like, I think that, you know, there's so many Democratic candidates and they all broadly despise Trump. And so the first chore that each of them has is sort of just to distinguish themselves and say what they're about and what the country should look like. There's also a deeper thing going on, which is, you know, as we talked about a little while ago, the explicit critique that the Democrats have kind of taken up is that we're not just running against Trump, we're running to fix the systems that produced him. And that goes beyond the phase of the campaign that we're in.
But is it also something that's coming out of the, I mean, in the midterms, the Democratic Party also kind of didn't go as hard at Trump himself. Many of the House races, candidates weren't running as anti-Trump candidates. They were running as like smart Democrats who want to represent their district.
Yeah. And I think that there was a sense that there were a lot of districts in the country where Trump was more popular than the sitting Republicans. And so I think that there was, from a lot of Democrats, and they were super successful with this, there was a sense that we can set aside the madness of 2016. You know, we can run on basic issues like healthcare. We can run against the place where the Republican Party has ended up. And we can run as the party of change. And they were very successful with that. I think in a presidential election, that's just naturally going to be harder to do because Trump is on the ballot.
So something else that we've seen so far is that none of these Democrats seem to have much of a desire to come out swinging at each other. You know, even with so many of them around, everybody seems comfortable so far just running their own campaign. Do you think that that's just because it's so early or are there reasons for that?
I suspect that it's basically because it's so early.
People will start fighting eventually.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that what you're asking about gets a kind of an interesting feature of this campaign, which is how kind of mundane and ordinary its background and form is. Like almost everybody who's running, certainly everybody who's a serious candidate right now, is a United States senator. And we just came through this experience in 2016 that was supposed to be about the changing form of the election campaign, right? Trump had like weaponized media, new forms of media, Twitter, but, you know, social media broadly. You know, we had this incredible insurgent candidacies from Trump, who had been totally outside of the political process on one hand, and Sanders, who had sort of functionally been outside of the Democratic Party on the other. And we come through that experience and we have a campaign in which all the candidates are showing up in New Hampshire and Iowa and South Carolina. We have candidates with extremely conventional biographies for a candidate for higher office. And you go around to these events and it sounds just very much like it's any other year.
And the one non-traditional candidate, Howard Schultz, right, was elbowed out of the party. I mean, he's
immediately and kind of universally.
If he's going to run, it's going to be as an independent.
I mean, look, from my perspective, like the big story in American politics over the last 2 years has been the tenacity and adaptability of the parties. At the conventions in 2016, you know, at the Cleveland convention, I heard, you know, several casual conversations among delegates where they would say, this feels like the end of the Republican Party as we know it. Ted Cruz is supposed to come out and give this big unity speech, and he refuses to endorse Donald Trump. There are pins being passed out on the convention floor that say sometimes party loyalty asks too much. So much of the Republican establishment was, you know, openly antagonistic to Donald Trump. And 2 years later, they all got in line. Similarly, on the Democratic side, like you go back to Philadelphia and there are like school teachers from the Midwest with tape over their mouths because they're Sanders delegates and they feel like they've been silenced. There's a mass walkout of delegates from the convention. And you could feel like this edifice is about to fall. You know, the party system is not going to look the same in 2 years as it does right now. And fast forward to where we are now, both parties have adopted pretty seamlessly to those insurgencies. It's striking, but I think pretty evident at this point that we're going to be looking, you know, 2 years after what was understood as sort of a historic, disruptive, crazy presidential election, at least a Democratic primary process and maybe a general election that looks much more familiar.
But isn't that also partially because Trump acts as a kind of binding agent here, that like it's impossible to imagine the eventual nominee not being endorsed by all the rest of the field, right? Because Trump is ultimately the figure that they're all trying to kick out of office. Is that not acting as a kind of like thing that's keeping the party from feeling the same kind of fractures that the Hillary Clinton-Bernie Sanders race had?
I think it absolutely is. Although, you know, Trump was also present at the end of the 2016 race, and, you know, it didn't prevent some of those fractures from forming. But, you know, yeah, to your point, like, not only is there a lot of kind of perspective and policy overlap right now, but it feels like there is a kind of team of rivals possibility at the end of all this, just because the distinctions between the candidates don't seem so pronounced and sharp. But, you know, I think the caveat to all of this, of course, is just that we're at an early stage and, you know, eventually it's going to be two or three major candidates and they're likely going to argue strenuously and, you know, we'll sort of see what happens then.
But so who has, I mean, it's early, but who has distinguished themselves? Who's surprised you in terms of either strength or approach towards their campaign?
I think the eye-catching figure has been Kamala Harris. Before the campaign began, she was sort of grouped in with a lot of the other less nationally high-profile senators. Her fundraising from the outset was pretty impressive. She had a huge crowd at Oakland when she announced. For me, in some ways, like the figure who I found myself thinking about more than I expected to is Sanders. I think that we all thought we understood exactly who Bernie Sanders is. And, you know, he kind of has one thing to say, and he says it all the time. And to see him raise, I think it was $6 million in small donor funds in the 24 hours after his campaign launched, it was just to kind of be reminded of the deep base of support he has and to start to think about how a Sanders 2020 campaign might look a little different from the one he ran in 2016.
Ben, thanks.
Yeah, sure.
Benjamin Wallace Wells is a staff writer. This has been The Political Scene from The New Yorker. You can subscribe to this and other New Yorker podcasts by searching for The New Yorker in your podcast app and find more political analysis and commentary on newyorker.com. Feel free to rate and review The Political Scene on Apple Podcasts. Our theme music is by Russell Gillespie. This program is produced by Alex Barron for newyorker.com with assistance from Kylie Warner. I'm Eric Latch, filling in for Dorothy Wickenden.